Welcome to another episode of the Confessions of a Recovering Landlord podcast, where you'll learn the secrets commercial landlords would prefer you not know. I'm your host, Jan Gibbons, along with my co-host and experienced commercial real estate broker, Bob Gibbons.
That's me.
Brought to you by Riata Commercial Realty, where we exclusively represent users of office and warehouse properties. Landlords have representation. Do you? Friend or foe? That's how I like to start it out.
You're asking me which one I am?
It's a chapter title.
Oh.
I need all the graphics. Melissa will put my graphics on here for that, but there we go. It's chapter one. Oh, gosh. I'm going to have to do this alone going forward. Confessions of a Recovering Housewife.
You're not a housewife. Well, you're that, man.
Not very much of one anymore. Now, Friend or Foe is chapter one in Confessions of a Recovering Landlord.
Oh.
And it has everything to do with landlords. And while I think it was extremely appropriate when you wrote the book, it's even more so today. And that's okay. One reason I wanted to talk about this.
Cool. All right. So, friend or foe. So the whole setup of this was that I talked about my childhood.
Oh, no.
Very, very briefly. I know how much you enjoyed me talking about my childhood. I had a great childhood in some ways. And one of the best ways was I grew up in the time when kids were sort of like, you know, you hear about free range chickens now. Well, we were free range children, and we were able to just, you know, leave our house and run around the neighborhood. And, you know, I grew up sometimes on army posts and sometimes not. And, you know, we would do all kinds of crazy stuff. We'd go out bike riding in the woods and take jumps, and we'd go, you know, frog hunting in the swamps in South Carolina, and just, you know, all kinds of stuff. It was great. And anyway, but I give the analogy that, like, whenever we would go to play a game like basketball or football or whatever, how did you know who your friend was or your foe, who was on your team or somebody else's team? And, you know, shirts and skins was the way the boys did it. And it was easy to pick out who was on your team. But I make the point that it's not so easy in business sometimes to know who's on your team, because in so many cases in business, the person who's trying to give you, sell you something or, you know, quote, help you in some way may actually be representing the company that's trying to sell you the product as opposed to them actually representing you. And so the entire chapter, confession number one, friend or foe, is all about who's on your team when it comes to commercial real estate, when you're especially leasing or buying office, warehouse, or medical space, and how do you know? And one of the first points I make is if you call the person whose name is on the sign in front of the building, you're talking to the foe. And I use foe here in a, you know, air quotes kind of way, because, you know, they're not bad people necessarily. They're just on the other team.
They're great people to the landlord.
Exactly.
But that's who they're representing.
And I used to be one of those people. You know, I represented landlords for 20 years. So,
ergo, confessions.
Exactly. So the point was that I was there to maximize the value to the landlord, you know, which means get the most rent possible at the least cost possible. So that's not who a tenant wants on their team.
Mm-mm.
They want somebody representing them only. And of course, that's what we do at Riata now.
Well, and the other reason that I think it's so topical right now is it's not just knowing who your friend or foe is. I think we've harped on this quite a bit, that we're in the tenant or occupier's corner. We're here to represent the best for your company today in your situation.
And every day in the future.
Every day in the future. Going forward, it's imperative to know as much as you can about your foe. Because underwriting a landlord's credit worthiness is coming to the forefront more and more. Landlords, and I'm sorry for them, some of them are doing fine, some aren't, but they are not going to reveal anything to you that you don't force them to. And that's where we come in again, not just with our expertise and our experience, but our knowledge that, hey, they may be having a loan come due in 6 or 8 months, and they're not going to be able to fulfill their commitment to you through tenant improvements, through whatever. They may not even be able to maintain the building if they don't get an extension on their loan, new debt, whatever. So it's imperative to know how your landlord is today and how they're going to be over the term of your lease, if at all possible, to get that information.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we've definitely talked about this on the podcast in the past, but, you know, the thing that's really, really frustrating is that landlords for so long have sort of been in the position where they think that they are, you know, I don't want to use a terrible term or something that is puts them in a very, very negative light. But the industry has been in a situation for the last hundreds of years where the landlord is considered the dominant player in the, you know, in the tenant landlord relationship, and the tenant's put into this subservient role. And therefore the landlord is going to review the tenant and decide if they're good enough to be in the building, and they will review the tenant's financial statements and their credit and their history and, you know, what kind of business they're in, how they're going to use the building, and then decide if they deem you worthy to be in their building. And there's been virtually no scrutiny whatsoever the other way around, where the tenant is scrutinizing the landlord. And that's a big problem, because in the lease, and also in our commission agreement, by the way, it says that the landlord's obligations are limited to their interest in the building, which means how much equity they have in the building.
Yeah.
So if you're negotiating with a landlord, as you pointed out, that has a loan expiring soon, and they're upside down, meaning that the amount of the loan is higher than the value of the building, they have no equity. They have no interest in the building. And even though they might own 500 other buildings, the lease says the interest in this building.
Mm-hmm.
So they have no liability. And so for them to turn around and say, we're not going to give you any information about us, for the tenant to make an informed decision and by entering into this business to business relationship, mm-hmm, is absolutely absurd. I just can't even imagine. So, you know, let's say we have a tenant who signs a lease or even a lease extension, if they're staying in the same building, where the landlord has to give them, you know, call it $50 a square foot for improvements, 6 months free rent. They're required to pay a commission to us or whomever is being representing that tenant. There is no guarantee that the broker's going to get paid, that the tenant's going to get the money that they've been due for improvements. And the lease goes further and says that there is no right that the tenant has to offset rent, meaning if the landlord doesn't do something they're supposed to, that they can then divert the rental payment to pay for whatever the landlord didn't pay for. So unless that's explicitly allowed in the lease, tenant has no right. So the poor tenant is now sitting in this position where they have no information about the landlord's financial condition. They're owed money, and their advisor is owed money, and they have no way of knowing if that'll ever get paid. And as you pointed out also, you have no idea if the landlord's even going to maintain the building in the future. And, you know, if they're upside down, even though all the tenants in the building collectively generally pay for improvements to the building, repairs and maintenance, all that kind of thing, sometimes the landlord still has to front that money. And if they don't have money, they're not going to do it. And the building just goes, you know, starts cratering at that point.
I can't imagine being an office building in July in Texas with no AC. It's just unimaginable.
And honestly, I've never had a situation where a client has been in a building where they quit, you know, paying the electricity bill and the AC goes out or the lights go out. But I have had clients in buildings where they were already in the building before they became our clients, and mm-hmm, the landlord just quit maintaining the building. Mm-hmm. So the carpet gets really ratty and nasty and bare. They're not cleaning the building as frequently as they should. You know, they may not be providing security services anymore if those were previously provided. There's all kinds of things that they stop doing, and that can create a lot of discomfort, I guess, is maybe the easiest way to say it for the tenants.
Well, the tenant can start losing the employees. I'm not going to go work in a situation like that. I'll work from home or they can replace me.
I mean, our very first client, I've told this story, but our very first client whenever Riata was started 20 years ago, wanted to move because the landlord was not maintaining the restrooms and they were embarrassed to send their clients mm-hmm. to the restroom. So they're like, move us to a building where, you know, that's not going to be a problem. And what's kind of ironic is that we moved them to a building. We were negotiating on that building, and halfway through the negotiation, the building sold. And all of a sudden we're now dealing with a new landlord. Well, a new landlord that has the money to buy a building seems like a pretty good risk, right? Well, ooh. It was until it wasn't. And they did a 10-year lease, and 10 years later, the landlord was not doing things the way they should. Apparently, they were running out of money because they didn't want to spend any money on improvements, and they didn't pay us for many, many months. And I had to go camp out in their office to try to collect. And then 5 years later, when that lease expired, we just did a 1-year extension, and we did get offset rights in that amendment. But yeah, anyway, it just, life can be difficult. So the fact that landlords are right now fighting tooth and nail to avoid showing anything to the tenant, mm-hmm. tenants is just ridiculous and doesn't make sense. And their argument for the most part is, well, we never have had to in the past, so we're not now. Or
it's a whole new world, friend.
Or more often than not, it's a captive tenant situation where it's a tenant that's renewing, or their lease is expiring and they're planning to stay there. And so the landlord thinks, I got them. I don't have to give them any information, or I don't have to give them any free rent or any money for improvements. And they just think they got you. So, you know, forget it. What are you going to do? Move? But I have had it recently where they've just said no. And their argument is, yeah, the tenant's not big enough for us to give you that information. I mean, what do you do? I mean, in that situation, you need to have an option, mm-hmm. other options. And in this one particular case, not too long ago, we didn't have any other good options. I mean, that was really the only building that made sense for this particular client. And so the client just decided to roll the dice and do the deal anyway.
Here's hoping. So 5 quick takeaways about that first chapter that I did want to talk about with the landlords.
Sounds like a quiz.
Number one, be sure the broker representing you is an exclusive tenant rep.
Exclusive, yes.
What does that mean?
Well, it means
exclusive.
Means they don't try to serve two masters.
Okay, explain that a little bit more.
Well, I mean, if I'm...
But I want a full service agency.
Why?
Exactly.
No, seriously, why?
Because it sounds good. It sounds like you've covered the waterfront. They've got to have the best market knowledge, the best comps. They know where to go. They probably have the best relationship with landlord. I think a full service is where I want to go.
Well, I think you're confusing full service with giant. So, you know, that's the argument that I hear with the giant companies that, oh, they're so big, they can do more than anybody else. They have done more deals with this landlord than anybody else. Therefore, they're going to be able to get me a better deal. They know every deal that happened in the market, blah, blah, blah. All that is garbage. But I think in this case, the more important thing is the agent representing a company full service, which means they don't only represent users, tenants, they also represent landlords. They may also buy
listings.
They have listings. So, mm-hmm. you know, in some cases, those listings may be in conflict. And so to make sure that you never have to worry about whether or not your agent is truly your agent or is also trying to be somebody else's mm-hmm. agent, just go with a firm that is exclusively corporate real estate services advisory and doesn't do any landlord work. So you never have to worry about that question. And, you know, there are quite a few firms throughout the country, throughout the world even, that are exclusively tenant rep corporate real estate advisory. And of course, we're one of those. But that is, it's really crucial because, you know, the people that are in the corporate services or occupier services divisions of the full service firms will tell you, I only represent users. And that may be true, but the guy sitting next to them may represent landlords. And it may, in fact, represent the landlord that he's negotiating against right then. And so, I don't know, it's just too risky. And, you know, if you read for the publicly traded ones, if you read their annual reports and such, they disclose that they have tons of conflicts of interest. So if they're just coming right out and telling you that, why in the heck would you use them?
Okay, number two is, in order to differentiate, get a disclosure notice from every broker you work with.
Yeah, and the disclosure notice, by the way, in Texas is required by law. So every single licensed real estate agent or broker in the state of Texas that ever has a conversation with somebody about services is required to give what's called the Information About Brokerage Services form. And that form is intended to spark a conversation that says, oh, by the way, I represent you, or I represent your landlord and not you, or whatever. And the problem is that the way the leasing agents on buildings deal with that is that they usually have that attached to the flyer for the building. And so they send it out to people and there's never any conversation about it. It's just attached. And, you know, if you're not in the real estate business, you don't really know what that's all about.
Right.
So, you know, we not only have the form, but we also have the conversation to make sure people understand we only represent you, the user. We do not represent the landlord and we never will. And I assume, I know other states require this as well. And oh, by the way, if the advisor, the real estate person, is going to be representing a landlord as well, and not just the individual, but let's just say, you know, Susie in one of the companies, in a full service company, is representing the tenant, and Bill in the same company, but a different division, is representing the landlord. That is what's called an intermediary situation in the state of Texas. And the tenant and the landlord in that case have to physically sign a document that says we are okay with this intermediary relationship in this situation. Even if that was already allowed in the listing agreement, they're still required to sign it later when that situation actually comes up front. And I would guarantee you that does not happen very often.
Mm-mm. Nope. Okay, number three is sign a written rep agreement that clearly states the tenant advisor represents your interests exclusively for every possible building. And I think that's a huge point I want to make, because a lot of people say, I'm looking on my own, but if you find something, send it to me. And your response is something I think is classic, and that is, I'm not going to do that, first of all, because it's not in your best interest. And the reason is, you might have found something that's really great, but I can't put it in my analysis to show you which building is best if you've looked at it on your own. I don't have the information on it. I haven't seen it, or I didn't show it to you for another reason. I didn't know it was in consideration. And so I can't represent you best. So I'm not going to.
Yeah. I mean, if you hire somebody to be your advisor, mm-hmm. let them advise you. And let them advise you on every option, including the building you're already in.
Right.
You know, if I can only advise the client or see what's happening on, you know, five buildings and they're considering two others, I can't tell the tenant which one's the best for them.
Right.
I don't know the terms of that.
Put it in the analysis spreadsheet and
yeah.
the traps on it.
So if you're going to hire an advisor, let them actually be an advisor. It's like hiring a CFO and saying, I'm going to let you do everything but accounts receivables. I mean, it's
that probably means you don't have any accounts receivable.
Well, or you're going under. It makes no sense at all. I want them to let me represent them on everything. And of course, that's going to sound selfish, right? Because I want to make sure I get the commission. Well, of course, I want to make sure I get the commission because I want to get paid for what I do. I'm an expert. I'm good at what I do. I should get paid just like anybody else should get paid for what they do. And let the market decide whether or not they get enough business to stay in business. So, yeah, I want to be able to feed my family. The difference in our situation is we speculate our time. We don't get paid a dime unless the deal actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to underwrite the risk of working with every client. So we need to sort of understand, you know, where are they now? What is their situation? Do they already lease space? How do they have the money to lease mm-hmm. or to buy a building?
Are they serious?
Are they serious? Are we dealing with the right person who has the authority? And so one of those criteria in underwriting or qualifying a client is, are you going to let me work with you on all the options? And if the answer is no, and you have, now you can have a representation agreement that is not an exclusive representation agreement that allows them to work with multiple brokers. So they can go out and have a representation agreement with five different brokers if there are five such brokers willing to do that. But my argument is, if I'm not going to be the exclusive, I'm not really going to work hard on the assignment because I have no expectation that I'm ever going to get paid. So if I see something come across my desk that I think is going to work, I might shoot you an email and say, hey, how about this one? And maybe I'm going to get lucky, but I'm not going to really go out there and beat the payments and really work hard to uncover what's in their best interest. I mean, we have a client right now that we're working with. We've been looking for, well, they bought an office building for their headquarters a couple of years ago, and we'd been looking for the right building for them for 2 years before the deal finally happened. Now we've been looking for another property for them, a different kind of property. And we've been working on that for probably, I mean, off and on for probably 2 years, but you know, seriously for the last year. And we just sent out an offer this morning on that deal.
Well, so, you were jumping ahead of me because number four is work with one tenant rep.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And one point that you made about that, but the other point that I thought that is really important is if I'm a broker and I call a landlord and go, hey, Billy Bob's looking at your building on North Central Expressway. And then another broker calls and says, hey, my client Billy Bob's looking at your building on North Central Expressway. The landlord's going to go, wait a minute, who's really representing you? You know, who has control over this client? I'm sorry, I don't think you're real, so I'm not going to negotiate in best faith with you because you don't have control over your client. So I think that's another really important reason for exclusivity is you look serious to the landlord, they're going to start negotiating harder with you.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. When I was on the landlord side as an asset manager, you know, I had leasing agents that listed the buildings for lease, whether they were in-house or outsourced to another firm. And anytime we had somebody, you know, a company show up with a broker, and then later another broker showed up with what sounded like the same company. And a lot of times it's if the tenant rep does not disclose the name of the company, that's not necessarily a bad thing or a red flag, but it raises the question, I wonder why. Maybe they're not exclusive. And so somebody else shows up with what sounds like a similar company.
Right.
All of a sudden it's like, ding, 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 ding. You know, what's going on? And I actually had that happen more than once when I was an asset manager. And in that case, I just called both tenant reps. And I just said, hey, you showed up with this tenant. So-and-so called me about the same tenant. I think you guys figure this out, work it out. I'm only paying one commission. So I'm going to work with whoever the tenant tells me to. So, you know, give me a signed representation agreement mm-hmm. or something that, so I know that I'm working with the right person because I don't want to waste anybody's time.
And our last bullet point is talk with your tenant rep only.
Oh,
now, I'm a good friend with my landlord. We have coffee every other Tuesday. Why can't I talk to him?
I had this exact conversation Tuesday of this week. I got a referral to a client who occupies a building where the landlord of the building used to own the company in the building, and he sold it. And so the CEO and he know
but
each
he
other.
Sold the business, not the building.
I'm sorry, he sold the business. Mm-hmm. Pardon me if I didn't make that clear. He sold the business and continued to own the building, and the business leased back the building. Well, the CEO of the business knows the landlord extremely well. And in fact, they had lunch together a week or two ago. well, now I'm in the picture. And the one of the very first things I said is, you may not talk to the landlord any more directly without me in the room or on the phone.
Thank you.
Well, because it just creates a lot of problems. If you have
muddies the water.
Yeah. I mean, if they talk to her about something and I'm not aware of it, mm-hmm. then the next time I talk to them and I don't know about that, I'm going to look like I'm not informed.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I talk about something and I don't tell the client and she talks to the landlord. So my advice to them is, once you hire me, you can talk to the landlord all you want about, hey, it's too hot or too cold, or you didn't clean the place last night. But if it has anything to do with, you know, the deal terms, the construction needed, tenant improvements, anything like that, you just say, that's something you need to please talk to Bob about, so that we can have, and it's not just, you know, so that I'm in control. It's because when two principals get together, and there is a time when they should, but when they get together, they usually feel pressured to make a decision on each item that's being discussed. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about the rental rate and they agree on the rental rate, and then they talk about the length of the lease, and then they talk about free rent, and then they talk about improvements, and then they talk about options, and they've made a decision on each one of those as they go. Well, they might have made a different decision on the rental rate or the lease term mm-hmm. once they know what the other items are.
Right.
And so by controlling, or, you know, narrowing down the point of contact to one, then it allows the tenant or the landlord, depending on which one you're representing, to then take everything into consideration and return a comprehensive, well thought out response.
Right.
And so it's really that more than anything, not just a control thing.
Interesting. Lots more to be said about control, but we're going to call it a day.
All righty. Well, thanks. And we'll see you the next time on Confessions of a Recovering
Landlord. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. And just a reminder to send in questions to see if we can stump Bob.
Not going to happen.
We really appreciate your taking the time to tune into this episode. We would love it if you would give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you're listening to this on. And if you are on our YouTube channel, we would love to read your feedback in the comment section. Also, be sure to subscribe so you get notified when we publish new episodes. Thanks, and see you next time.
Bye.